Let's begin with our prayer before study. Lord Jesus, may I enter into the eternal divine order of God to place my absolute nothingness in the heart of the Most Holy Trinity, to give to my God the joy of fulfilling the purpose of my existence by doing all the acts of my life through the Immaculate Heart of my Mother Mary and in the divine will of God. And in this same manner, may I live, pray, act, eat, walk, sleep, and do everything. May my soul be devoid of any other longings, wants, or desires, and may you, my beloved divine will, do with me whatever you want or desire. All I ask is that you bind me to your most holy will so intimately that I may never swerve from carrying out what I know to be your good pleasure, and that I remain so docile to the movements of your divine will that you never perceive even a breath of resistance in my soul to your requests of me. Come, divine will, with all the angels and saints, especially my sweet Mother Mary, to touch my forehead, to imprint on it the Holy Spirit and infuse in me true light, so that I may understand the truths and the good that are in these writings and prayers. Amen. We're going to begin tonight with March the 28th, 1926, and we have some wonderful messages from the Lord tonight. So, Louisa begins: having received Holy Communion, I was calling everyone, my sweet mother and the saints. I was calling the first Adam and the retinue of all generations up to the last man who will come upon the earth, and then all created things, so that all together, prostrate with me around Jesus, we might adore him, bless him, and love him. Now notice, in praying in the divine will, you don't go alone. You bring all heaven with you, and you bring everybody from Adam to Zachary with you as well. We put our arms around the entire human race, and we love them all into the presence of God. And we do what we can in the divine will to substitute for them, to make reparation for them, to offer them to the Lord in every possible way. It's really beautiful. So she said, so that nothing might be missing around Jesus. Now notice, her concern is Jesus. All of this she's doing because she loves him. And because if she loves him, then she knows that Jesus deserves everything. He has paid for everybody. He has paid for the redemption of everybody. He deserves everything, and she wants him to have everything. And I think that taking that approach to interceding for others, it's actually very interesting, because you will persevere for his sake, even if you don't like the people you're praying for, which is very interesting, because we have to pray for people whether they are considered enemies or friends, because in the divine will, we don't have enemies except the demons. St. Paul said that in Ephesians chapter 6, our enemies are not flesh and blood. So she's concerned about Jesus, so that nothing might be missing around Jesus. Of all the works which came out of his hands, not a heart that palpitates, nor a sun that shines, nor the vastness of the blue heavens studded with stars, nor the sea that murmurs, and not even the tiny little flower that gives off its fragrance. She wants absolutely everything around him. I wanted, she said, to centralize everything and everyone around Jesus' host. I think this is terribly important in this new era that we're moving into. Jesus will be reigning from the tabernacle. It is Jesus' host that will be reigning upon the earth. He won't be coming back physically, as some denominations seem to think. God never has to repeat anything twice, ever. But there would be no point in coming back physically if he's to reign for this entire millennium anyway. So she wants to centralize everything around Jesus' host. Now, her instinct to do in this prayer is what the church will be doing in that new era, absolutely bringing the whole earth and all of the heavens and everything around Jesus. Jesus will truly be Lord. It'll be a most wonderful thing. So that we might render him the honours due to him and make reparation, of course, for all the past when it wasn't given to him. His will made everything present for me, she said, as if everything were mine and I wanted to give everything to Jesus. Now, because Louisa is the first and therefore the one that the Lord wants to use to open the new era to us. He allows her to actually see, to perceive in her mind this whole reality. It's not necessary for us to be able to see it. Once we know that it's a reality, we just make the offering anyway. So, while I was doing this, she said, it seemed to me that Jesus was happy in looking at all generations and of all the things around himself. One of the things I like to do is, I like to do it last thing at night before I close my eyes, when I pray for all the generations, is to bring them to him on the cross so that his dying eyes can actually see the fruits of his labours. Just as a little moment of consolation to him in those dying moments. That's the instinct that Louisa has, to offer him the comfort and the consolation that she possibly can offer to him. But you need to be thinking of him all the time to do this kind of thing. If you're just into making official prayers, you won't have this personal response. And it's this personal response to Jesus that I've been saying to you over the years that Jesus actually wants. You can say the most wonderful prayers that other people have written, and they are fine. But one tiny little one coming straight out of your being to him is infinitely better, in my opinion. And if we all do that, then he gets the variety that he's looking for, that I've been telling you about down the years. He needs this variety. In other words, in a wonderful painting, if you look at one of the great master paintings, and you'll find all kinds of sub-themes and different colours. And it's really fantastic what the painter can put into just one canvas. If you look at one little corner, you might be just looking at a garden full of the most beautiful flowers. In another corner, you'll be looking at a magnificent sky. And that's quite apart from the main theme that he's actually painting. Well, I think in the whole vast scheme of things, Jesus wants these subplots as well, because it adds to the beauty and glory of the response that the human race really needs to give him. So he was looking at all the generations and he was pleased with it. And so she says he clasped me to himself. And that's very official language. Let's use ordinary English. He gave me a hug and he told me, my daughter, how content I am in seeing all of my works around me. So he likes us to bring everything around him. I feel I am given back the joy and the happiness which I gave to them in creating them. Now, notice it's the return of love all the time. Love goes out from God as the creator. Everything is created out of love and sent out into being with love as the main ingredient in us. And that love must go back to him to complete the cycle of love. Otherwise, the creation isn't complete. So I feel I'm given back the joy and the happiness which I gave to them in creating them, and I repay them with new happiness. So it starts another cycle of loving and giving on his part. So this is the great good which my will contains and brings. And in one who lives in it. Now, a question I got last week was, what exactly do you mean by living in it? And I'll give you an answer to help you to think about it. And if you want to come back with the response after the class or privately, that's absolutely fine by me. My response was, I think I'm living in the divine will when I give him every thought, every word, every action, every movement, every motivation, every desire, everything. When I'm holding nothing back, I'm really living in the divine will. I'm swimming in water when I plunge myself into it, and there's water everywhere. So he has to be everything to us. To me, that's living in the divine will. But your response would be interesting to me. So the great good which my will contains and brings. So this is it. And in one who lives in the divine will, the divine will centralizes the goods of all. Notice what he's saying. She started out by wanting to centralize absolutely everything in Jesus. That's where it starts. So he turns around then and he says that if a person is truly living in the divine will, that the divine will or God himself centralizes the goods of all in that person. Because there is no good which my will does not bring. It's the source of all good. And the divine will binds the soul to everyone and to everything that belongs to it. Therefore, here is another little key to testing how far am I into the divine will. And that is, this is a universal response to God and to the human race. Literally, nobody is left out. It's love without boundaries, because that's who Jesus is, love without boundaries. And so you can't be holding on to political prejudices or religious prejudices or racial prejudices or any other prejudice that they're talking about. That is completely outside of this, completely. You have to embrace absolutely everybody, regardless of whether they have religion or not, whether they are persecutors or saints. You embrace them all. As Jesus embraced the lepers and he embraced the sinners and he embraced absolutely everybody. And he loved his enemies as much as he loved the others. Because in the divine will, a human being's not your enemy. Our enemies are not flesh and blood. They are the powers of darkness in high places, but they're not flesh and blood. And so we have the instinct in the divine will to bring as many human beings back into that circle of love and into the fullness of that circle of love. So in the divine will, you are an evangelizer. You are somebody who is out there looking for souls. So if you're not there in your relationship with God, then realize that you haven't gone very far into the divine will. Because if we're truly, truly, truly looking at God, he gets us to look at our neighbor. Because they're the two sides of the commandment, to love God and to love your neighbor. And your neighbor is every human being on the planet. So the divine will binds the soul to everyone and to everything. So while the non-believers are talking about their worship of Gaia, Mother Earth, it is actually the people in the divine will who love the earth correctly and who want everything to be centralized around its creator and for everything to come into the divine order. It binds the soul to everyone and to everything that belongs to it, because everything belongs to God, the creator. So if the creature had not withdrawn from my will, Jesus said, I would have found everyone within everyone. In other words, our love would have embraced everyone. And this is what he wants when we come back into the divine will, that he will find everyone in you. I would have found everyone within each one and each one in everyone. Now there's your John 15:9. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you, so you are to love each other. So we have to love each other with the divine love that the Father loved his Son. This is what we're talking about. The goods, the light, the strength, the knowledge, the love, the beauty were all to be in common. So we wouldn't have this terrible rivalry and someone climbing over somebody else to get to the top. That would be impossible. There was to be neither yours nor mine. This is true socialism. Either both in the natural and in the spiritual order, each one could have taken as much as he wanted, just as he tells us so frequently that with the sun in the sky, each one of us can have as much sun as we want to. And today we probably had more than we had in a long time. But you're not taking it from anybody else in having as much as you want. And that's the incredible thing about this extraordinary unity that is not only among the three divine persons, but that unity that is between them and each individual soul living in the divine will. And therefore, all of these souls living in the divine will have this extraordinary unity between them. Haven't you noticed that all of us in the divine will classes, for example, that we feel we have a bond with each other that we don't have with other people? That there's an automatic recognition of family. It's there. It's actually very noticeable in the divine will groups. And so it's this recognition of this extraordinary relationship that's going on inside of us. So Jesus continues then, and he says that the Son is actually a symbol for us, as he frequently says. The human life in my will was to be symbolized by the Son. Everyone can take its light, and as much as they want, without anyone else lacking it. However, as man withdrew from my will, the goods, the light, the strength, the love, the beauty remain divided and as though halved among creatures. So, notice the divide and conquer that Satan uses. Once we remain divided, Satan can get in and do his terrible damage. When we're in the divine will, there's this extraordinary unity and recognition of unity. Therefore, since this has happened, there's no more order, there's no harmony, there's no true love. If there's anything we would recognise today on the earth, there certainly isn't true love. There are many people actually living in the same house, claiming to be partners or married or whatever, and they probably don't know what love is at all. It's extraordinary. Love has grown cold today, which is one of the signs of the end times. But when you come back into the divine order and you come back into this extraordinary relationship with God through the divine will, love returns. Harmony comes back. Divine order comes back. Wholeness comes back. And so your whole being, body, soul and spirit, is gradually transformed so that people can recognize that something has actually happened to you. Oh, if the sun could be divided into many rays. Watch this now, this is very interesting. These solar rays detaching from the center of light would end up becoming darkness. That is exactly what happened to Lucifer. God is light. That is 1 John 1:5. God is light, in him there is no darkness. And so when Lucifer, one of the highest angels in heaven, utterly glorious, moved away from that light, that automatically meant going into darkness. And so when human beings move away from the divine will, as we see society today doing, you see the darkness coming upon society. And the more people will move away from that center, the more darkness will come upon society, and people will no longer be able to see spiritually. And they won't be able to see, hear or understand spiritual things at all. It'll be very frightening. It's getting very close to that. And he says, and what would happen to the earth if this happens? Ah, indeed, no one would ever again have a light of his own all for himself. So it was with my will. By withdrawing from it, man lost the fullness of the goods, the fullness of light, the fullness of strength, the fullness of beauty, etc. And therefore he was forced to live a life of hardship. So now you know why life is difficult. Therefore be attentive, he said. Let your living in my will be continuous. Now, continuous is every nanosecond of every day. There are no minutes off. There's no such thing as 5 minutes off from the divine will. You're either in there like the fish in the ocean, totally and completely submerged in the ocean. It must be continuous so that you can contain everything. You see, we won't be able to either hold the things that the Lord has given to us. We won't be able to do it if we're not living continuously in the divine will. And this is the only way that he can find everything in us and everyone as well. So, the extraordinary thing is that instead of continuing this discussion with Jesus, Louisa breaks off and goes into a new topic. And so she asks Jesus a question. And that is, you know, since the Blessed Mother had absolutely everything given to her and she was in the divine will from the first instant of her being, why didn't she pray for the fiat voluntas tua on earth as in heaven? So that's what she's thinking. And really, in thinking that, Louisa is sort of saying, why did you wait? And then to start all this length of time to start it with me. So, Louisa said, if the true living in the supreme will contains so much good, why did my celestial mother, who was all will of God, not pray the fiat voluntas tua on earth as in heaven together with the longed for Redeemer, so as to let man return to the supreme fiat from which he came, to give back to him all the goods and the purpose for which he was created? So why didn't she do the two together? Why did she just pray for the Redeemer and not pray for the fiat? Okay, well, the third fiat. So, more so, since being all will of God, she had no nourishment extraneous to God. This is very interesting. Because of the depths that she was living in the divine will, there was nothing coming in from the world to feed her. There was nothing coming in from the self to feed her. There was no block in her person. There was no block in anything that was coming from the world. She was completely and totally for God. And since that was so, she possessed the very divine power. And with it, she could have interceded for anything. Now, she was right. Louisa's right in her thinking. So my sweet Jesus, moving again in my interior, sighed, and he said, "My daughter, the primary purpose of all that my mother did and of all that I did in redemption was that my fiat would reign on the earth." That was what God wanted to do. But he's now going to say, "But we had to take certain steps to get to that point." It would not have been right, nor a true love, nor a great generosity, and even less an operating worthy of the God that I was, if in coming into the world I had given and wanted to give the creatures the smaller things, which was the means to be saved, but not the greater one, which was my will. Now, what he's saying to her is, actually redemption is smaller than the divine will, naturally enough, because people have lived in it for centuries, for two millennia. And even when they reach sanctity, they've not reached this level of divine will that we're actually talking about. Okay. And he would like to have given the greater one first, but they were not ready. In the same way, you bring a child to school when they're 4 years of age. Are you going to teach them trigonometry? Are you going to teach them astrophysics? Of course you're not. You're going to teach them how to read and write first. So redemption, which contains not only the remedies, but all possible goods that exist in heaven and on earth. Not only salvation and sanctity, but that sanctity which raises them to the very sanctity of their creator. That is the bit that we have to look at. That we're looking at the highest possible level of sanctity available to the human being. And of course, he's going to say to her, look, we had to take it in steps. People weren't ready. And you can see from reading the gospel that they weren't ready even for what Jesus wanted to do in redemption. Oh, if you could penetrate into each prayer, each act, and each word, and each pain of my inseparable mother, you would find in them the fiat which she longed for and prayed for. It was there. That's like saying, a mother is praying for her child and wants the absolute highest and best for her child, but she still has to send the child to primary school. And then the child has to go to the next school. And then the child has to go to the next school. They've got to go from A, B, C to the top. You can't just give them the top first. So, but the fiat was there. If you could penetrate into each drop of my blood, he said, into each one of my heartbeats, breaths, steps, works, sorrows and tears, you would find the fiat having primacy in them, which I longed and asked for creatures, because everything had to be interceded for at the time of redemption. But while the primary purpose was the fiat, my goodness had to descend to the secondary purpose and act almost like a teacher. I don't know why he says almost, because he's so much a teacher in the gospel. Who, though possessing the highest knowledge and being able to give noble and sublime lessons worthy of himself, but since his students are so illiterate, had to lower himself to giving the lessons in ABC. To then be able to reach little by little his primary purpose of imparting the lessons in the knowledge that he possesses, and to make of them as many teachers worthy of such a teacher. Now, to me, that sentence is a most wonderful reflection on the training of the apostles during the time of Jesus' ministry. He had to start at the very beginning with them. I mean, after all, he took some fishermen from the sea who hadn't had any learning, and he had to take them from the very beginning. And what he achieved was unbelievable. Now notice he used apprenticeship with them, that they walked with him, they shared his life, and he was able to explain things as they went along. And so they had the whole example of the way he lived his teaching as well. And so when we're training teachers, they have to be able to see in us a life lived as well. And, you know, teachers make teachers. It's actually very important. So if this teacher did not want to lower himself to give lessons in inferior studies and wanted to give lessons in the higher science, then the students, being illiterate, would not have understood him. And confused by such great knowledge, which they ignored, they would leave him. Okay, so you try teach trigonometry then to a four-year-old, and they'll go away from you and play with their dolls on the floor. Okay, so a teacher must understand the student and must understand the needs of the student. And no matter what you know about divine will, if your students are at the first level, you give them first level. You're not actually honouring them by giving them the 10th level. That's why I've never agreed with beginning reading Louisa Picaretta's writings at volume 12, when Jesus had gone to the trouble of revealing 11 volumes before that, all of which are full of incredible divine knowledge and understanding. We have to take, this is a journey. We can't just jump into it presuming we're ready. We're not ready. We've got to take it step by step. And those of you who have been in the divine will for a number of years, you know it's a journey. And you know that going back to the early volumes, you can still go back and get it as fresh as anything again. So we have to take the students step by step. And that's what Jesus did in the gospel. And the incredible thing is that the same Peter who said to Jesus, "No to suffering," the same man, when he had been through his training, been through his suffering, and been through his trials and all the rest of it, he laid down his life for his master. The lessons only come slowly. And so it's not right for us to think that we can jump from lesson 1 to lesson 10. I think that's presumption. So if the teacher did not want to lower himself to give lessons in inferior studies and wanted to give lessons in the higher science, the students, being illiterate, wouldn't understand him and would go off. And the poor teacher, not wanting to lower himself, would give neither the small good nor the great good. It's very, very interesting. You'd end up actually giving nothing. And so he tells us in the next paragraph, start at the beginning and work your way up. Now, those of you who are teachers, please take this on board. Now, my daughter, when I came upon the earth, creatures were all illiterate in the things of heaven. And you know, a person can have a university degree in something or other and be completely illiterate in spiritual things. So they were all illiterate. And if I had wanted to speak about the fiat and the true living in the divine will, they would have been incapable of understanding. Since they did not know the way to come to me, even though the Psalms are full of the request, "Lord, teach us your ways." And I'm only giving you one example, Psalm 86:11. I could give you many. It's all over the Psalms, "Lord, teach us your ways." And Jesus told us in John 14:6, "I am the way to the Father." The apostles had just said to him, "Lord, show us the way." He said, "I am the way. I am the truth and I am the life." So since they did not show the way to come to me, the majority of them being crippled, blind and sick, that's spiritually, I had to lower myself within the guise of my humanity, which covered the fiat, which I wanted to give. I had to become their brother. 1 Corinthians 9:22, "I became all things to all men in order to save some of them." I became their brother. I associated with everybody. Look at the humility. Now, don't forget, this is God incarnate. This is not any man. I associated with everyone to be able to teach the first rudiments, the ABC of the supreme fiat. Now, to me, the ABC of the supreme fiat is Deuteronomy 6:4-10. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one Lord, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your being. Notice the word A-double-L all over the place. You've got to be completely committed. And that was given at the very beginning of the journey of that people to God. And so he said, and everything I taught, everything I did, and everything I suffered was nothing but preparing the way, preparing the kingdom, and preparing the kingdom of my will. And the only thing he could do at the time was give us that wonderful prayer that we call the Our Father, in which he literally put on our lips, Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And so the church has prayed that for 2,000 years in preparation for its fulfillment. Then he explains, as he has done many times up to now, this is the usual way with our works. We do the minor things in preparation for the greater things. Now, actually, we do that as well. If you want to paint your house, you first of all have to clean it up. You've got to clean down the walls. You've got to prepare the walls, make sure that they get ready for painting and all that. And the last thing on earth you do is painting. But you do a lot of work before you do the painting. Because if you don't do the preparatory work, you're going to absolutely waste the paint and the time. This is the usual way with our works. We do minor things in preparation for greater things. Did I not do the same with you? He said. At the beginning, now we're back in volume one now. At the beginning, I certainly did not speak to you about the supreme fiat, nor about the height, the sanctity which I wanted you to reach. So we're now covering the first 4 to 6 volumes. Nor did I ever mention the greater mission that I was calling you, because in those volumes, Louisa is a victim soul. She doesn't know until she gets to know that up in volume 11 and 12 that he's giving her a completely new mission. So what's he doing? Jesus says you have to go through ordinary sanctity before you get into the sanctity of the divine will. And one of the mistakes that I think people are making today is trying to jump into the sanctity of the divine will without knowing anything about ordinary sanctity. That's not very good, you know. You're going to have to backtrack an awful lot, because you actually need to know something about the spiritual life. And that's why I have insisted all down the years, study the early volumes, get everybody on their feet with regard to ordinary spirituality. And then when they come to the divine will, they're on their feet, they can take it. And you have it here, it's not my words, Jesus is saying it. So he said, I didn't even tell you about the greater mission I was calling you to. I kept you as a little child, to whom I delighted in teaching obedience, love of suffering, detachment from everyone, death to your own self. You see, the basics of the ordinary spiritual life. These are the first lessons. And that's why volumes 1 to 4, I call the foundation stones of the divine will edifice. Because if you don't get that and you think you can live in the divine will with problems of attachment, you won't get anywhere. If you think you can live in the divine will without any love of suffering, what are you going to do? You won't manage at all. If you haven't accepted reparation and you're not prepared to do reparation, you're not going anywhere in the divine will. All those lessons are in the early volumes and they're absolutely essential. So he said, I delighted in teaching you obedience, love of suffering, detachment from everyone, death to your own self. You know you can't actually live. Now, live is 24/7, 365. You can't actually live in the divine will if the self is reigning. And that's why, again, in the early volumes, we deal with the death to self problem. And as you responded to me, the translator says corresponded, which is not really the way we speak in ordinary English today. As you responded to me, I rejoiced because I could see prepared in you the place in which to put my fear. Now can't you see what he's at? He's saying he has got to carve out a space in us in order to put the fiat. But there is no space if there's worldliness and selfishness and sin and attachments and all the other stuff. There is no space for the divine will. All of that has got to be scooped out. And so He's now going to tell us this is the way it happened in redemption as well. It's the way God works. Everything was done for the purpose of that fiat might reign again in the creature, just as we had issued him from our creative hands. Okay, notice this. This is very important for all of you. We have no hurry in our works. I always remember the very first Divine Will seminar we had in my house with Tony Hickey giving it to us. And he gave us all this wonderful teaching all day. And at the end of that time, he asked, are there any questions? Now, most of us were so full up to our ears, we couldn't even think of a question. One person asked a question and said, is there a shortcut? At that point, I just burst out laughing. It was so plainly obvious there was a massive journey ahead of us. Somebody just wanted a shortcut. That's typical of human beings, and that's not the way God works. God works in each one of us step by step by step. He's like somebody building a house, and it goes in brick by brick, piece by piece. And the thing is, if in some particular area I block his movement, then the building of that house is blocked until that problem is solved. We have no hurry in our works because we have not only the centuries, but all eternity at our disposal. I love that. I think that's fantastic. Therefore, we proceed at a slow pace. Have you noticed that with the divine will? The Lord is very careful. And if you have made a move, he wants to consolidate that move, make sure he has really conquered that little bit inside of us, and then he'll move on when he's sure that that space has taken. And so it's slow. So you may look back after 10 years in the divine will and say, well, I don't think I've got very far. You're not exactly a very good judge. The Lord alone is our judge. He's the only one who knows just how much work he has already done in you. So don't be your own judge. Therefore, we proceed at a slow pace, but for our own triumph. First we prepare and then we act. As I said, if you're going to paint, you first of all have to do a lot of preparation. Nor do I have less power after returning to heaven than I would have if I continued to be on the earth. My power is always the same, whether I'm in heaven or on earth. Did I not call and choose my mother while being in the celestial fatherland? In the same way, I have called and chosen you for the longed for fiat with the same power with which nobody can resist. I love that nobody can resist. In other words, the call to the divine will has been quite persistent in all of us. And you'll notice that if you even try to turn away, it's so impossible because the alternative is so awful anyway. So he's calling, and the more we respond to his call, the stronger the call gets. It's actually quite important. So in the same way, I have called and chosen you for the longed for fiat with the same power with which no one can resist. Even more, I tell you that in order to obtain this, you have at your disposal greater and more important helps, I would say. Things isn't exactly the most wonderful word to use there, than my beloved mother did. Therefore, you are more fortunate than she, because she didn't have a heavenly mother to help her. That's lovely. She didn't have a heavenly mother's works to help her in order to obtain the longed for Redeemer. She had only the cortege of the acts of the prophets and the patriarchs, which were much more on the human level because you're back in the Old Testament, okay? And the good of the Old Testament and of the great foreseen goods of the future Redeemer. So Blessed Mother only had the help that was available from the Old Testament, and they longed for Redeemer who was coming to her, that Jesus was helping her from heaven. But you, on the other hand, you have a mother. You have all her works to help you. You have the helps, the pains and the prayers and the very life not foreseen as with the prophets, but carried out of your Redeemer. The prophets could only see things ahead of time. There are no goods nor prayers that have been done and are being done in the church which are not with you. In other words, all the prayer of all the church of all time is with us. I think we should remember that a little often. It's wonderful. And to help you to obtain the longed for fiat. Now, why does he say that specifically to Louisa? Because Louisa is the first, and the divine will was to come on the earth through her mission and through her intercession. So when he says the prayer of the whole church is with you, it's 2,000 years of praying the Our Father, which is really wonderful. Since the primary purpose of all that was done by me and by the Queen of Heaven and by all the good was the fulfillment of my will, everything is with you. In other words, we have an enormous amount of help that was certainly not available to our Blessed Mother. And so we need to realise the riches that we have, and we need to call upon them. We also have all the saints on our side praying for us and helping us. We've all the angelic choirs helping us as well. Therefore, be attentive. I will always be with you, which is Joshua 1:5. And so will my mother be always with you. You will not be alone in longing for the triumph of our will. So let's look at March the 31st. Very wonderful message here in March the 31st. So in paragraph 1, entering into the divine will is entering into God himself. That's why you can't really be living the divine will unless you're in union with God. My poor mind was dissolving in the divine will. And an endless light, now that endless light is God himself, it is the divine will, 1 John 1:5, God is light, and 1 Timothy 6:16, God dwells in unapproachable light. Okay, so an endless light invaded the little circle of my intelligence, and while it seemed that this light was as though centralized in my mind, it could spread outside and fill the whole atmosphere, penetrating even to the heavens. It seemed as though centralized in the divinity. Now, what she's noticing is that the divine will is centralized in her on earth and in the divinity in heaven. It's the same will. But who can say what one could feel or understand while being in that light? One could feel the fullness of happiness. Now, in the volumes leading up to this, Jesus has said that the divine will contains the fullness of all beatitude and is the beatitude of the saints in heaven. Nothing could penetrate into that light which might shade the joy, the beauty, the strength, the penetration of the divine secrets and the knowledge of the supreme mysteries. So, there's an awful lot could be said about that. The Old Testament scriptures and the New Testament scriptures both tell us that those who enter the divine will in heaven, all tears will be wiped away, that they will have the fullness of happiness. Isaiah says it, and it's quoted in the New Testament as well. I want to give you Matthew 5:8, the pure in heart see God, and Romans 8:35 to 39, that literally nothing would be able to separate us from God in this wonderful experience. So while I was swimming in that light, 1 John 1:5, my beloved Jesus told me, my daughter, this light, this dwelling which is so enchanting, which knows neither sunset nor night, is my will. And for that I want to give you Revelation 21, verses 22 and 23, which we will deal with if you come to the Revelation class. But right now I'll just simply say that in the New Jerusalem, you don't need sunlight or moonlight because God himself is the light. Everything is complete in this light. Happiness is complete, strength, beauty, knowledge of the Supreme Being, everything. The light is so endless because it's eternal. It's our will. It came out of the womb of the divinity and it came as the heritage of man. It was given to us. It was the most beautiful inheritance we could give him. Psalm 121 verse 4. Revelation 22:5. It came out of our innermost being, bringing with itself a share in all of our goods, to let the creature inherit them, and to form him as all beautiful and holy in the likeness of the one who created him. So in the likeness of God is Romans 8:29, and Psalm 82 verse 6 says, I said you are gods, all of you sons of the Most High. So what is the key that unlocks all of this beauty and glory and splendor of the first two paragraphs? And it is that Jesus says that knowledge is the key. Now, for all of you who are teaching divine will, knowledge is the key. We've got to keep teaching this material, and gradually people will grasp it, they will understand it, they will enter into it, and that's it. All we have to do is help them to understand. See then, my daughter, what it means to do my will and to live in it. There is no good that exists in heaven or on earth that the divine will doesn't possess. I want you to know them. Otherwise, how could you love them? How could you possess them? Or how could you use them in the different circumstances if you don't know them? It's terribly important. If I don't know I have a 50 euro note in my purse, then I don't think I can go down to the shop and buy the stuff I need to buy. But if I know I have this money and that it will buy it for me, that's different. It's just the simple reality that the knowledge gives. So, number one, if you do not know that you have a divine strength at your disposal, sure, you'd lose heart at the smallest thing. Number two, if you do not know that you possess a divine beauty, you'll not have the courage to be with me in a familiar way. You will feel dissimilar from me, and you will not have the audacity to snatch from me the fiat to make it come and reign on the earth. Number three, if you do not know that everything I have created is yours, you won't love me in everything, and you will not have the fullness of true love. And so with all the other things. Everything depends on the knowledge. Now, number four, if you do not know all the goods which my will possesses, that there is nothing which does not belong to the divine will and which you must possess, it would happen to you as to a poor one who was given a million. Oh, I said 50 euros. A million is different. But without letting him know that such an amount had been placed in his little hovel. The poor one, who doesn't know he has this money, continues to live his poor life because he's in ignorance. His stomach is half empty, his clothes are tattered, he drinks in sips and the bitterness of his poverty. But if he knows that he has a million, he changes his fortune. He turns the hovel into a palace, he feeds himself abundantly, clothes himself with decency, drinks the sweet tips of his richness. So as many goods as one can possess, if he does not know them, it is as if he doesn't have them. That's as clear as daylight. So in the next paragraph then, Jesus says that we have to know and love in order to possess, to take hold of the goods of the divine will. So this is the reason so very often that I expand your capacity. Now, here's a hint for you. You should ask the Lord frequently, expand my capacity to be able to take what you're giving to me. Expand it according to your wisdom, the way you know. Increase your love in me. So I expand your capacity. I give you more knowledge about my will, and I make known to you everything that belongs to it. Now, for this knowledge and understanding, if your mind is stuffed with all the worldly knowledge and scientific knowledge you don't actually need, then there's no room to learn about this knowledge. So we have to make room in our intellects, our memories, and our wills for this knowledge. So that means putting other things that are not so important in their own place. This must take precedence. So, in other words, the Lord, if he's to give us more knowledge, there has to be room inside of us for it. And I make known to you everything that belongs to the divine will, so that you may possess it. It's not enough to just simply know. That you may possess not only my will, but everything that belongs to it. Besides, in order to come to reign in the soul, my supreme will wants to find its own goods, its own dominion. In other words, if the king comes to visit, he wants to see that the place is not actually a hovel, that is some kind of a royal palace. So all of this preparation has got to be done. And the soul must make them her own, so that upon coming to reign within her, the divine will may find its own dominions over which to lay its regime, its command. If it does not find heaven and earth within the soul, over what can it reign? If the Lord is coming to return to reign, and he wants to reign in our souls, and we don't surrender our souls to him, well, how is he going to reign? He's not going to be like the enemy who will overcome you and deceive you and take possession of you without you agreeing to it. The Lord isn't like that. Here is the necessity for which my will wants to centralize all goods in you, that you must know them, you must love them, you must possess them, so that being in you, the divine will may find its kingdom and will dominate and rule over it. So Louisa said, afterwards I was thinking about what Jesus had told me, and more than ever I could see my littleness, and I said to myself, how can I centralize within myself everything that the divine will contains? It seems to me that the more he speaks, the littler I become and the more incapable I feel. Now, that's a very important thing for Louisa to say, because all of us will have had that experience, but we might have interpreted the experience negatively. In other words, how could that happen to me? Sure, I'm an absolute nobody. You know, I'm a sinner. I'm not a saint. How can this possibly happen to me? And if we give this reaction, it can be that we're actually stopping what the Lord wants to do. Louisa correctly sees herself as incapable and a little nothing, but that's exactly what the Lord wants to use. He wants to use our nothingness, but it needs to be a positive thing. And so I'll give you John 3:30. He must grow greater and I must grow smaller, as John the Baptist said. So how can this be? She said. And Jesus said to her, my daughter, you must know that my celestial mother was able to conceive me, the eternal word within her most pure womb, because she did the will of God as God does it. There you have it. There you have it. There you have it. There's the secret. It's to do the will of God divinely. That's it. When we have the will of God inside of us and we let the will of God do the will of God, it's done divinely. There's the answer. And it doesn't matter that I'm an absolute definition of a nobody. It doesn't matter. It's to let the divine will act as the divine will within us. I think this is brilliant. All the other prerogatives that she possessed, that is virginity and conception without original sin, sanctity and seas of grace and everything else that she possessed, were not sufficient means to be able to conceive God. Now in English you don't say, ah, God. Because all these prerogatives gave her neither the immensity nor the all-seeingness to be able to conceive God, who is immense and who sees everything. And even less the fecundity to be able to receive him. In sum, she would have lacked the seed of divine fecundity. Now watch this. What is this seed? Watch this. She would have lacked the seed of divine fecundity. But by possessing the supreme will as her own life, not as something outside of her, as her own very life, and by doing the will of God as God does it, so doing the will of God divinely, this is the highest privilege of a human being on this planet. She received the seed of divine fecundity, and with it the immensity and the all-seeingness. Wow. The whole secret of doing everything is doing the divine will as God himself does it. This paragraph gives you the answer to everything. Everything. I just think it's brilliant. Therefore, in a natural way, I could be conceived in her because I lacked neither immensity nor all that belongs to my being. Isn't that incredible? So in this final paragraph that I'll do with you tonight, he tells us that we have to reach the point of actually acquiring the right to have this possession of the divine will. You don't get this overnight now. This is a journey. Now, my daughter, the centralization of everything that belongs to my will be as though natural for you also. If you arrive at doing the divine will as God himself does it, there's your secret. The will of God in you and that which reigns within God himself will be the same. What is the wonder then if everything which is of God and which this will rules and preserves and dominates, it's also yours? Rather, what is needed is that you know what belongs to the divine will so that you may love the goods you possess, and in loving them you may acquire the right of possession. So notice it's loving them, that you must know them, you must love them, you must live the divine will so that you can begin to take possession of them. And as you do the divine will as God himself does it, then you acquire the right of possession. It's absolutely incredible. Doing the will of God as God does it was the highest, the most substantial, the most necessary point for my mother in order to obtain the longed for Redeemer. And of course, it's the same for Louisa. All of her other prerogatives were the superficial part, the decency, the decorum that befitted her. It's the same for you. If you want to obtain the longed for fiat, you must arrive at this, doing the will of God as God does it. Now, I don't think we can improve on that. I think that's the most incredible thing. And please take it slowly, slowly, slowly. Lent is beginning tomorrow. Please read this, meditate on it. Ask the Lord to bring you there. And whatever blocks are inside of you, just say, Lord, just be sovereign, Lord, and take them away. Take the blocks away. So I want to thank you for joining me, and good night. God bless.